by the way, pretty much at least go over the first four or five verses up to where we are and know the meanings by the word by words. Who feels that they're capable of that? Who feels close to being able to do that? Huh?
Second one.
Could you do any of them, you think?
Maybe a few words.
A few words here and there. Like the different vegams. You probably know those.
Yeah. The ones that are closer to me, I would.
The vegams that are close to you. The dati, patigunati. Bhunkte, bojayate, jaiva. That's close to everyone. Utsahan. Okay, in this verse, Krishneti yasya giritam manasadrieta. The holy name, Krishneti yasya giri, with his words, manasadrieta. One should honor the devotee who says the holy name. Dikshasti chet pranatabhis cha bhajantam ishan. One who is giving bhajan, doing bhajan to the Lord, Isha, one should, and has taken diksha, pranatabhis, one should offer him respectful obeisances. Sasursaya, one should serve bhajana vigyamananya. That one who is engaging in devotional service and who is realized, and ananya, means his devotional service is undeviated. And that's a symptom of his realizing how important devotional service is. And then anya nindati shunya riddham, and whose heart is devoid of the tendency for ninda, ipsita sangha labdha, one should desire to attain his association. So those are the three ways that a devotee should keep his friendship with the Lord. Yesterday in the first section, it described the Kanista Bhagavat devotee, the Madhyam devotee, and the Uttama devotee. What's that sound? Or was that with the paper on it?
You should put the paper on it. Just to make some noise.
It was lower. I think that must have been back. I don't know. Now, in section B, Let's read some of the section summaries that you got. Section B, section summary. Sheldaman, read. Section B.
Then you should approach the spiritual master who gives you diksha and teaches you how to advance in transcendental sense.
Good. Diksha is the key of this one. Now, anyone else like to read theirs? Yeah, anyone else? And this is one of the distinguishing factors of Madhyam Bhakta, that he's taking diksha. Yeah.
When one is genuinely disinterested in material enjoyment and is seriously interested in transcendental subject matter, he should sincerely approach a guru for diksha initiation and practice the guru's instructions faithfully. He can then be accepted as a Madhyam Adhikari.
Now, after describing in the first section the three different standards or classes of devotees, this section, section B, talks about the necessity for diksha in the process of becoming advanced. Now, I don't know what points struck you, but one of the points that struck me, and this again is the qualification for diksha, is that one, on page 52, beginning on the third line, there's one sentence. When one becomes so disinterested in material enjoyment, he becomes fit for initiation by the spiritual master. So this is actually a very high standard for diksha. And as Prabhupada has said in here, and many times in the past, in lectures, that one shouldn't accept the spiritual master and take initiation from him as some type of a social fad, or as Prabhupada would use the phrase, a pet guru, or some type of a fashion. Everyone else is doing it, so I should also get a spiritual master. Or even some social convention that everyone in my family takes initiation. Or I'm already a certain age and I should be initiated. But actually, initiation of diksha has a completely different purpose, a transcendental purpose. Because diksha means the divya gyanam yatuladad yat kuryat papyasi shankshayam. By diksha, one becomes disinterested in material enjoyment and gradually becomes interested in spiritual life because there's this divya gyanam. It means the process of obtaining divya gyanam. So when one is actually interested in obtaining divya gyanam or transcendental knowledge, and interested and disinterested in material life, wanting to leave material life behind and attain the spiritual platform, then one is ready for diksha, actually. So it's actually the mark of a very serious devotee. And only serious people in previous days would actually gain acceptance from a bona fide spiritual master, other than as a social custom. We know the story of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and how he attained the lotus feet of Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj refused him and he had to threaten to kill himself. I have no reason to maintain my life if you don't accept me. Or the story of Narottam Das. Who knows that story? Who was Narottam Das Guru Maharaj? His Diksha Guru?
No.
That was the Shiksha Guru, yes. Lokanath Goswami. Lokanath Goswami was living in Vrindavan, even though he was from Navadvip side. And he came to Vrindavan to find Mahaprabhu, but he couldn't find Mahaprabhu because Mahaprabhu had been in Vrindavan and just went south, and then when he went south, Mahaprabhu came back to Vrindavan and then went back to Bengal and or Orissa, Jagannath Puri, and Lokanath Goswami couldn't attain his association or service even though he was an incredibly exalted Vaishnava. So he, because he couldn't obtain the service of Mahaprabhu, so he thought, he had vowed not to accept any disciples. But Jiva Goswami, who was instructing Narottama Das, and Narottama Das was, again, one of the most incredibly exalted Vaishnavas, and Mahaprabhu had predicted, according to some Shastra, Mahaprabhu, I think it was the Narottam Vilas, Mahaprabhu had seen the river Padmavati, and when he saw that river, which was just by the birthplace, which flowed past the birthplace of Narottama Das. Anyone know the name of the city when Narottama was born? In right now in Bangladesh? Anyone know?
Padma?
No. Keturi. K-E-T-U-R-I. Keturi. And when he saw that river, he started calling out Narottam, 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 Narottam. And everyone was amazed. Who is Narottam? Who is Narottam? So Narottam actually, when he deposited Prema Bhakti in that river, Narottam was not yet born, and then Narottam bathed in that river, and he became golden in complexion from Prema Bhakti. Anyway, Narottam, being not an ordinary person, he went to Vrindavan, the son of a king. He went to Vrindavan, and he was studying Bhagavatam under Srila Jiva Goswami. and was ordered to take initiation from Lokanath Goswami. Jiva Goswami didn't accept any disciples, although he trained everyone. He was a chief amongst the Vaishnavas, but didn't accept any disciples himself. So Lokanath Goswami wouldn't accept Narottama Das, and Lokanath found every day that the area that he was passing in was being cleaned every day, miraculously, and he didn't know who was doing it. So one day he hid after a year or two, or sometime between a year or two, and he caught Narottam as the one, Narottam the son of a king, cleaning up the dirty area like that, not taking any credit, just doing it in a covert way, just to do some service for Lokanath Goswami. And eventually Lokanath Goswami, after quite a long time, accepted him as his disciple. So it's to get initiation from these incredibly qualified sadhus is a very, very, very rare thing. It is not meant for an ordinary person. It is meant for people who really already want to go back home, back to Godhead, and who want nothing out of this material world, and are ready to do anything to the satisfaction of their spiritual master. But yet, Diksha is the Madhyam platform. And one needs Diksha to come to the platform of spiritual Uttama. Although one can say that the holy names are not dependent on Diksha, yet this is the transcendental system to take initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. And one who does not take initiation will find himself troubled and fraught with difficulties in the spiritual path. So this section explains clearly the importance of Diksha in the process of advancement. In fact, all the sections after this explain important aspects of advancing from Kanista to Madhyam to Uttama. Are there any other points that struck anyone in this section? Arjun?
I always wondered, if Prabhupada quotes this verse several times, Tasya Brahmacharyana Kamenacha Dhamenacha. But actually that's the verse that Prikshit Maharaj rejects.
Where?
In the sixth canto, when Sukadeva Goswami is testing Prikshit Maharaj, and he first suggests fruitive activities, then he suggests Gan, which is this. And then he rejects both of them and just preaches bhakti. So I just wanted to get any understanding of Prabhupada quotes that often, even though actually it was rejected by.
Also, Ramananda Roy also rejects Sarvadhamam Prityaja and Yat Karosi Rashnasi, because in these pastimes they're trying to make specific points. Certainly, brahmachari life and tapasya are not being rejected, but as an end in themselves or as different from bhakti, they're not appreciated. Controlling one's senses and equality, what is that? Tapasya, brahmacharya, samena, damena. One could look at them as steps to something higher, and then when one gradually makes advancement, then one takes to bhakti, or one looks at them as something that is practiced along with bhakti and comes as an anga of part of bhakti. But bhakti isn't dependent on it. That's often the point. But bhakti is an independent entity in and of itself, and it's not dependent on these things. And these things are useful in as far as it develops as parts, as angas of bhakti, the process of devotional service. Yeah.
I was also wondering if maybe you could speak a little bit about kind of like in our situation within this kind of problem, Srila Prabhupada, with the kind of requirement, like, I don't, minimum requirement rather, from the disciple's point of view in accepting Diksha?
Looking at the spiritual master?
Yeah.
At his qualification?
No. What I mean is, in other words, we may not be at Narottam's level of, you know, intensely, you know, desiring to attain Dharma. Or Bhakti-Shul-Bhakti-Santas. In other words, that might not be where our heart is yet when we're trying to accept things.
Well, there's also Harinam initiation, which is more to encourage, and then there's Diksha, which should the second initiation, or what we call Brahminical initiation, that one should be more strict about. Unless one's serious, one shouldn't get it. Now, there's many ways to look at this. From the point of view of a spiritual master who's not on the Uttama level, to have unqualified disciples is one of the greatest dangers for his spiritual life, and it's one of the greatest headaches. That's looking at it from the point of view of a spiritual master who's not on the highest of all platforms. And one should not accept as a disciple, for that reason, unqualified, unserious devotees, or those who are aspiring to be devotees but are not yet qualified. Because the spiritual master shouldn't be looking to accumulate disciples for himself. And one of the greatest causes of fall down of spiritual masters like that is that they're on the Madhyam platform and they have disciples who have many, many, many problems and who are not very serious, and they meditate on the problems of their disciples instead of on Krishna, and thereby have trouble. So it's actually a very dangerous thing. Therefore, in the Nectar of Devotion, under Sadhana Bhakti, which is devotional service and practice, it describes devotional service and practice . Now there's 64 angas, or parts of devotional service. And early on, not in the 64th one, but the 12th one, not accept unfit disciples, not construct many temples, or not reading many books. So this is listed in the category of sadhana bhakti, not siddha bhakti, but sadhana bhakti. So it describes here, I'll just read this point. In the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 13th chapter, verse 8, Narada Muni, while discussing with Maharaj Yudhisthira the various functions of the different orders in society, especially mentions rules for the sannyasis, those persons who have renounced this material world. One who has accepted the sannyas order of life is forbidden to accept as a disciple anyone who is not fit. A sannyasi should first of all examine whether a prospective student is sincerely seeking Krishna consciousness. If he is not, he should not be accepted. However, Lord Chaitanya's causeless mercy is such that he advised all bona fide spiritual masters to speak about Krishna consciousness everywhere. Therefore, in the line of Lord Chaitanya, even the sannyasis can speak about Krishna consciousness everywhere, and if someone is seriously inclined to become a disciple, the sannyasi always accepts him. The one point is that without increasing the number of disciples, there is no propagation of the cult of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, sometimes even at a risk, a sannyasi in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may accept even a person who is not thoroughly fit to become a disciple. Later on, by the mercy of such a bona fide spiritual master, the disciple is gradually elevated. However, if one increases the number of disciples simply for some prestige or false honor, he will surely fall down in the matter of executing Krishna consciousness. So, when I read this for many, many years, I thought this was really coming from Prabhupada. You know, that Prabhupada's realization was that he needed to do this to spread Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. But actually, this point is coming from Jiva Goswami. It's not actually coming from our Prabhupada, it's coming from Jiva Goswami. This is for, this injunction, Jiva Goswami explains, is not for preachers. It's actually for saints living in seclusion, not for preachers spreading bhakti. This is what Jiva Goswami says. And Narada had many disciples. So many people, that's one of the examples he gives. Refraining from disciples gives one the guilt of miserliness, Jiva Goswami says.
For a preacher.
For a preacher of knowledge. Disciples of the spiritual master, though, they should be qualified. In other words, there's a fine line given here. One shouldn't accept unqualified disciples, but one should accept disciples for the point of view of preaching and the spreading of the preaching movement. But one should be very careful that the disciples don't generate the desire for greed, the desire to be worshipped, pratishtha, because these will destroy one's spiritual practices. This is the spiritual master on the Mandim platform. Jiva.
The disciple, Diksha, initiation, is also talking about second initiation or...
First or second, really. But there is a this kind, we don't make such a big distinction. But in this verse, a distinction is made. And in many of the... in the Gaudiya Masters, a bigger distinction is made. And Prabhupada also made that distinction sometimes in his letters. First initiation is... Sometimes we say the first initiation is the more important initiation. Sometimes we say the first initiation is just to encourage and the second initiation is the more important one.
Why are we using them alternatively like this?
You mean saying the opposite?
Yeah. For suiting the circumstance or...
No, just different instructions have been given. Maybe it's for the circumstance.
They have the same system.
Who?
Gaudiya Mastas, first edition.
They call it Harinam and Diksha, as Prabhupada actually puts in Harinam and Diksha there.
And is the Harinam the connection to
the Prabhupada has said that for sure.
And the Gaudiya Mastas.
You say it is or it isn't?
What do they say?
I don't really know. I can't remember, but they consider the second initiation the main one. I'm sure about that. The Prabhupada said the first one is enough at different times, but he also said other things.
What have we seen when this fine line has been neglected?
This fine line over here? What?
What have we seen recently? That
what
is not like followed? And then they've accepted and qualified disciples?
What's this? what's your opinion on that? I don't really want to comment like that, but the point is that one should become... This is a warning for spiritual masters on the Madhyam platform, that one should be very careful. But yet he has to do it. Yet he should be careful. But one shouldn't do it as a master, one should do it as a servant. One should just think himself the servant of his spiritual master. But I'd like... there's two sides of this question. What comes up here in this section is the more the qualification and the need for taking diksha or initiation. What comes up in towards the end of the purport is the qualifications for the spiritual master. So when we get to that section, we'll talk about that one more. But in this section, a few points that came out that are extremely important. One is that diksha is necessary, but one should be qualified. One shouldn't just do it, but one should do it in the right consciousness for the right reasons. One should be serious about it. And the problem is that the tendency is to be whimsical. That means be serious in some point of our life, for a few months or a few years about it, and then we move on to other things in our life and then become serious about other things. So if one has that tendency, one shouldn't take initiation. A spiritual master should be very careful about accepting disciples who are not qualified. Yet he must accept disciples to put on the preaching movement, or else he's guilty of miserliness, of lack of preaching, because if you preach, you will get disciples. A sannyasi. This is also described in by Prabhupada. It says, one who does not want to take the chance should not preach. So that's on one side, and the other side is one has to be careful. And what and the dangers are listed very clearly, that if you get if you do it for the wrong reason, accept disciples for the wrong reason, honor, to get worship, greed, and then one will guaranteed have trouble for sure, and the disciples won't be benefited either. Yeah, and then after.
Sometimes a devotee has joy. He may, after some time, he may want to accept a spiritual master. And then, in the course of accepting that spiritual master, he will get some instruction from that specific spiritual master.
Yeah.
So then he follows the instruction of the spiritual master and he's still doing engaged in devotional service. But after some time, the spiritual master rejects him outrightly and, frankly speaking, he has no hope. I mean, he's completely devastated. So what happens in that case?
You mean before he has initiation?
He's not initiated yet. I'm a person who actually happened to two devotees. So they are still in the movement, engaged in devotional service, and this particular spiritual master has completely rejected them.
But he hasn't accepted them.
I mean, he hasn't, but he has
so
given
how can
instruction.
You, right, but there could be general instructions, but the relationship hasn't been consummated, so to speak. It hasn't been made legal or official. Mm-hmm. So it's better that a little bit of heartbreak goes on there before the initiation.
I can take it a little further. That the first person that happened to, after some time, he became inimical towards the movement and he started causing havoc after this happened.
But maybe.
And secondly,
but that can't be. You can't blame the spiritual master for that. That means he shouldn't be giving instructions to people. And maybe he saw in that person's heart that this person had a very inimical, envious nature, and that therefore that's why he didn't want to accept him. And therefore, it proved to be right. Maybe it's like that.
No, this only happened after he was.
I know that, but maybe. But you say that it only externally manifested after, but that doesn't mean that an astute, spiritually astute person can't perceive that it's there anyway.
In the second case is that this person was asked to leave his normal work outside and join the temple by the same spiritual master.
Yeah.
And he did all that.
Yeah.
And now he's in the temple. And now he has been rejected.
Yeah.
So
well,
it's a tough situation.
But all I can... Yeah, I can understand that. But all I can say that it's better that if the spiritual master and disciple weren't exactly suitable for each other for one reason or another, that it's better that they find out before the initiation ceremony is performed. Much better. But you say rejected, but he's not rejecting him as a devotee or as a member of ISKCON. He's rejecting him as himself being the personal link to the parampara. He's not rejecting him from the association of Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami and
but it's very difficult to understand for someone who's in that situation and he wants an approach, spiritual master. And then he has like a label on him. He has been rejected, so he wants to know what's happening.
Well, what should a person do if he's like that?
So
I think that's a better question. See, if one understands that he needs a spiritual master, this is the point. I need a spiritual master. I thought it was you. But it doesn't seem like it. But if he's convinced that it is him, he should continue, and maybe by the grace of Krishna, when that spiritual master sees his determination, he'll change his mind. Or, from the other side, the spiritual master may not just be his spiritual master, even though the so-called disciple may think he is, but the spiritual master's realization may be something different. Maybe he understands, I cannot help this person and bring him back to Godhead. So if that's actually the case, then the disciple, knowing that he needs a spiritual master, should cry and beg Krishna with tears in his eyes, please give me your mercy and send me to the lotus feet of my spiritual master, of a spiritual master. Because the spiritual master is, it's Guru Krishna Prasad. It's Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Vij. It's the mercy of Krishna. He's the representative of Krishna. So it's up to Krishna. So one should pray very, very deeply that he, that Krishna send him to the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, and Krishna will. But it may not be the one who he may be attracted to. Because in the beginning, or even later on, the attraction has to do with, although this is maybe somewhat controversial, but it has to do with modes of material nature. It's not like every spiritual, it's like people have modes that agree with each other. There are some spiritual masters who are so exalted and advanced that they can attract everyone. But generally, that's not the case. It's because one person acts in a particular mode, not that he's controlled by the modes, but he's acting through a particular mode, and another person appreciates that particular... Some people like intellectuals. Some people like great kirtan singers. You know, this is the way it works. This is reality. You know, there's people they're Indians who wouldn't accept anyone but an Indian. What is that? But we have to deal with the current condition of a person's faith. That's reality. It's not the highest platform, but that's reality. And by your telling me that person became very inimical by this, it sounded like that might have been the reason that, like, why he didn't accept him, because one doesn't want to have a disciple who's, if you don't do what he says, he's going to, you know, break every bone in your body or something like that. Or become very angry at you.
I know this person very well. And
yeah.
I'm a spiritual master also.
Yeah.
Because I'm from the same Yatra
part. Yeah.
And where you're from now, I'm way from quite some time, you're in the third joint.
Yeah.
And he only became like that after he was devastated.
There must have, because I know people who have looked towards spiritual masters and they have rejected, and the spiritual master didn't want them, and they didn't become like that. So it must have something to do with the person. You can't say he's completely innocent, because, as you said, the other person's still in the temple. So one of them has a different mentality. He has a different chitta.
But the point is, like, the first person, he actually, because of that, we had many, many problems just because of him being rejected.
But you're not listening to my point. You're saying, because the implication that you're making is that it was the spiritual master's fault. And I'm saying...
For me, that's clear.
Huh?
For me, that was clear.
Right, I know, and that's what you're trying to convince me of. But I'm saying that it's not always it may not be the spiritual master's fault, because there's so many examples of people who didn't achieve the spiritual master that they thought they wanted. And they didn't do that. So there must have been something in that person that was very very heavy. There must have been. Because so many other people, they didn't do that.
I was wondering also that you read now. In Lord Chaitanya's life.
Oh, that he always... But still, that has to be... It's a general principle. It's a general principle. That's if he's qualified. You may not see him as qualified. He may not have the time to deal with him on a very, very individual basis. So many things. Be careful of judging too harshly. Jiva?
Also, the disciple, when he's choosing a guru, if he's not qualified, if the disciple isn't qualified, taking a change, taking disciples, is it that the guru will fall down from the reaction, possibly? The reaction of his disciples, seeing as they're not qualified?
Yeah, there'll be so many reactions. One of them is that he'll be having the disciple have so many problems because he's not qualified, and the guru will have to have all the headaches.
Is it possible that the guru could fall down by accepting disciples?
That's what I'm saying.
So but then the disciple should also see if he's not qualified, then he shouldn't take
him. Yeah, right. See, a humble person would think, I'm not qualified, maybe. I may become more qualified. Instead of, how dare he not accept me? Doesn't he know who I am? See, if a person's ready to accept someone else as a guru, that means accept him as Krishna, Shakshad Hari, as the representative of Krishna. So then, if he doesn't, if he accepts him as Krishna's, as his words, as Krishna's words, when the spiritual master says no, that means that he's already not accepting him. How dare you tell me that? Yeah.
There was an interesting story in that regards. I was reading in the Guru Reform book, Satsuru Maharaj, where he says that he's trying to tell the disciples to stop calling him Srila Gurupad.
Yeah.
And they're saying, oh, it's just see how humble our spiritual master is. And he finally has to tell them, look, just do what I say, though. What kind of disciples are you if you don't do what I say? Telling them to stop calling Srila Gurupad.
When a disciple, after he's initiated by the spiritual master, and for some reason the other, maybe the material desires, he leaves. Now, the spiritual master, is there a link that is cut off from?
That depends. It depends on the spiritual master. Prabhupada once said this, I heard him say this, that one man asked a question in Melbourne, what happens if a disciple falls down? Shouldn't he, if he's a Brahmin and he comes back, shouldn't he be given some menial service instead of return to his original position? And Prabhupada said, that depends on the judgment of the spiritual master. So if the spiritual master judges that this person has rejected him in such a way, rejected him personally, he can make sure the contract is broken. But if he just has some trouble because he's soft-hearted and he's affectionate to the disciple like a father is to the son, if the disciple comes back in the proper mood, very repentant, he'll naturally accept him. I remember once, in the early days, one of the first disciples of Prabhupada was Ray Rama. But Ray Rama, in the early days, in Hayagriva, they had beards. And Prabhupada, because they were all hippies anyway, and Prabhupada didn't want to be very strict with them, because if he was strict, there wouldn't be any Krishna consciousness movement. There would be no hope of people getting strict if he was strict in the beginning. So, but Ray Rama, I think actually when I knew Ray Rama, I don't think he had a beard even. Or maybe he did have a beard, I can't remember now. But in any case, he was the editor of BTG, and then I remember one time when I was at New Vrindavan, Prabhupada didn't appreciate one of the Back to Godheads. I think it was Back to Godhead number 8. And he was chastising Ray Rama, and Ray Rama was arguing back. And Prabhupada was saying, if you're arguing with me, your spiritual master, what can I do? But then after some time, within a few weeks or a month, Ray Rama left. Then, about 2 years later, Ray Rama came back to work with the press. But Prabhupada told him, you have to shave your beard. And he didn't want to, and he left again, Prabhupada. Because without any discipline, there's no meaning of disciple. So Prabhupada tested him, and he failed. So what could Prabhupada do? So did Prabhupada reject him by sticking to this point? No. But to have a disciple without discipline is useless.
So did he cut off his snake with Prabhupada or just left him as an island?
Whatever he gained, well, that we'd have to ask Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very, very merciful. I don't know the depths of their intimate relationship, but I know that Prabhupada very much appreciated those early devotees. So I'm sure Prabhupada has some place in his heart for him, and certainly Krishna appreciated. So whatever advancement one makes is never lost. Whatever advancement he made is never lost. And then when he starts again, he'll pick up from that spot. But he'll have to surmount that same problem. One has to fight these battles at some time or another. Let's just see where we are. We're going slowly on this one, but this one's such an important one, because this whole verse ultimately it deals so much with the guru disciple relationship and issue that I don't think we should go fast. Yeah.
I had a question to bring this point further. What happens if the disciple actually takes an initiation from a spiritual master and afterwards he feels that this is not the real person or that's not the one that I feel comfortable with? And so how does that spiritual master should deal with a disciple or vice versa?
Well, the GBC has confronted this particular issue, and it depends on the spiritual master. If the spiritual master has, it's just that he thinks it's not really his spiritual master, he should, and if he's in good standing, he should respectfully request him to take shelter and shiksha from somebody else. And how should the spiritual master deal with it? He should allow him to do it.
He should.
Of course. What's the use of having a disciple who doesn't want to be instructed by you? I mean, looking at it from that point of view.
Yeah, but should a spiritual master, is this like an offense or is this offending?
It's not, he's probably going to think. Hmm? No, how is it an offense? Well, anyway, the GBC has dealt with it in such a way that it's showing that it's not an offense. It shouldn't be disrespect. There shouldn't be any disrespect on the part towards the spiritual master.
He mentions that the disciple, with the permission of his spiritual master, can take instruction from another one. So he just receives the blessings from his spiritual master, and then he goes and takes.
Right. But the only difficulty in this is that if one tends to be whimsical and then go hopping from one to the other, see, in my opinion, they should be allowed, any time a disciple wants to go hop, more or less wants to let him go. But getting another fool to give him shelter, that's that person's problem, maybe. I mean, unless you really have a grip on him. And then you can say, no, you do this, because it's obviously it's not always the spiritual master's problem, it's often the disciple's problem that he can't surrender to this one, and he can't surrender to that, he can't surrender to any of them. That's also a tendency too, to be whimsical. But sometimes it's really found that without any knowledge, without any realization, just because everyone's doing it, we take initiation, and there's a peer pressure. Especially in the old days of the movement, everyone in this area had to take initiation from somebody. So there were mistakes made and people were hurt. And, they just sort of said, yeah, I should take, just sort of blindly walked right into it. And then, when they woke up a a few years later, they, or a few months later, or whatever it is, they just realize that I need some further instruction.
It's quite a reality.
It's quite a reality. Huh?
Make me think of it. It's quite a reality what you're saying.
Yeah, well, I know the reality. That's why I'm saying it. This is, you know, this Vamacharya system. I have to say there were some good aspects of it, but there were some very bad aspects of it. The good aspects of it were mostly managerial. The bad aspects of it were spiritual. And it's philosophically incorrect. And there were casualties because of that.